Hello and welcome to The Good, The Scars and the Rugby in Partnership with our friends at Allianz. It's great to be in your screen, in your earphones, yet again with another installment of the show. Tins can't make it this week, but we have the bib-wearing queen here on the show. She's not wearing the bib, which I'm really disappointed about, Emily. I thought I'd made it clear enough on Twitter that I'm a big fan of this phase in the Emily Scarrett
chic.
We need to merchandise that stuff and sell it.
Do you know what? They're really precious about it. You have to give them back after the game. There's only two water bibs and you have to give them back. So yeah, as much as I was rocking it, I'm sure. I had to give it back, unfortunately.
If you missed out on this match, it would be worth just finding the highlights somewhere, not only for Emily wearing the water carrier bib like she did, and she was on screen a lot. She wasn't only carrying, she was also just punditing on the side. Loughborough Lightning at Franklin Gardens, phenomenal performance, great entertainment. Were you very desperate to get out there, Emily, or was it just great to be part of it in, well, even just the water carrier capacity?
Bit of both. I obviously would want to be out there, but at the same time, the whole occasion was awesome. Obviously, it's the first time we were at Franklin Gardens with the whole Northampton Saints partnership, which was awesome. A few of us did a bit of corporate stuff for them before the men's game. A few of us injured a lot that we got wheeled out to do all of that sort of stuff and kind of make us as visible as possible. So that was awesome. They received us really, really well. A good number stayed behind, to be fair, considering, Saints had lost the game beforehand. I think sometimes that has a huge impact on how many people want to stick around and support us. But yeah, it was awesome. And the finish was insane. We started really well and then I was concerned because we had a dip and Exeter came back and the way they're able to keep the ball and stuff. But then the last 10 minutes, Sadio Kabeo was an absolute machine amongst others. And there's this wide view. There's a couple of different angles of where the game's recorded. And there's this wide view. Myself and Datisha Harper were water carriers. And as Sadio scores that final try with time up, but apparently there was like seven more minutes to go because none of the clocks are aligned, which was really frustrating. But we're just going absolutely nuts. It's like we've won the World Cup final, which is obviously we need to kind of get back in our box a little bit. But it was a big win for us in the context of the season and stuff. So yeah, the girls loved it.
Well, we welcome to the show this week an all-female lineup, and we don't mind it this way at all. We're in such esteemed company. She's known as Tails. I feel like I should still call her Rachel. Currently coaching Allianz Prem 15 side Sail Sharks, the only player to captain both the Welsh 15s and a 17s team. Played captain and coached Barbarians. I mean, it is a CV of note. Tails, welcome to the show. Shall I call you Rachel? Where are we?
Fine, Tails is fine. I respond to both, but Rachel normally if I've done something wrong, so Tails is good.
Okay, brilliant. Welcome to the show. Where are you? Where do we find you right now?
You find me pre-coaching, actually. So I'm up in North Wales, but I'm just about to go coaching Colwyn Bay's inside this evening. So it's a little bit windy and blustery up here, but yeah, I'm place up in North Wales and about an hour and 20 minutes away from Sale.
Wow. And with the storms that have just recently whipped through, I mean, a portion of my house whipped off, but luckily I didn't have any actual water or wind come inside. Are things okay out there?
Yeah, probably unsurprisingly, we're on AstroTurf tonight. There's not many pitches that have survived up in North Wales. But everything's fine. Everyone's okay, thankfully. So touch wood, that's the end of it, and we can embrace summer, but I'm sure I'm being far too optimistic.
I had moments of spring today when I was driving. Sun was out, I had to put my sunglasses on. I think it's here. Just stay positive.
Oh, you just jinxed it, Emily. I cannot believe you just said that. We're not even into March yet.
Yeah, you got to believe in these things.
Wow, no, the optimism.
March. I don't know when it's okay to go into sliders, but not yet.
Well, I do have blossoms in the background of the picture there. So, I mean, I saw the blossoms and just went straight for them. I was like, any bit of cheer, any bit of, there's summer on the horizon, I'm going to grab and take home with me. you are coaching men, and I'm sure people ask you this a lot, but I'm just going to step right into that now. How is that different?
Oh, straight in. I don't know if I can give it like a true answer, I guess. Like I've known Colwyn Bay Rugby Club since I was 5-6 years old. So I guess I've never really been seen any different. Probably haven't been seen as a woman, but I hope no difference in my coaching ability or seen differently there. So it's always been a really comfortable environment for me to go and coach and to try stuff. And to come back and coach the senior men has been, I've probably been there about 5 years now, I think. Like I've seen with COVID and the pandemic, time sort of stood still for a couple of years, but it's been a really great learning curve for me to try that stuff out. I mean, it's community rugby, you know, it's understanding that club dynamic. And then obviously when I worked up for the Welsh Rugby Union RGC here, I got to work with the boys academy. So probably a totally different feel. So they're really different environments and probably wanting different things out of their rugby. But hopefully that's helped me kind of adapt my own coaching. And I think having that diverse experience just lends itself to how I can keep improving my own coaching skills.
Do you have a preference? Because I always find it really interesting when men come and coach women for the first time. And one of the biggest things they always say is they ask loads of questions. And it's always like this mind-boggling thing, like they've never come across a woman before. But I guess you're almost the opposite of that. I just wondered if you have a preference in terms of, because I know the girls largely are really receptive to coaching, full stop. But having never coached, I guess, a men's side before, it's just quite interesting.
Yeah, I think I've heard that a lot, and I think it's always interesting because I don't know if that comes with like rugby age of the player, and because, you know, generally and certainly in like the generation that I grew up in, you know, a lot of females joined the game much later on in life. Like they didn't start up at an under-6s, under-7s sort of stuff. So their experience of rugby was probably came late in their development, and I think that's why there's so much questioning around game understanding and what the purpose it is. And I think, you know, whether we're wired slightly different and wanting to know why we're doing what we're doing before we do it, which might not be a bad thing and might answer a few questions in my life, to be honest. But no, I don't think, like, as far as preference goes, probably not. Like, I love coaching at transition age. Like, I think the sort of like 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds are amazing, like male and female. Like, they're absolute sponges. And I just think such a great age group to look after because they're just so hungry and receptive, and they're also just so confident and willing to try stuff, which is great and pushes me out of my comfort zone. But yeah, I mean, like, Colwyn Bay, I've been really lucky because I know them so well, which has been really nice for me, and I'm looking forward to see where they go in the future, you know, when it's not me coaching them.
So when you say you know them so well, is there a part of that where they also know you, that you're standing in the community and you're like, you know, being so established there makes the work easier?
Yeah, I mean, I get taken the mickey out of quite a lot. I take the mickey out of them quite a lot. I think, you know, it's a proper community club, you know, families and generations have gone through it. You know, there's fathers, daughters, sons, you know, granddads, everybody there, and everybody knows everybody to a certain degree. And I love that part of it. That's what initially got me into rugby. That's why I love the game and what it can do. And yeah, I think we'll always try and stay true to those family values there. You know, one of the players has just had a baby and it's amazing, and it's just really nice to be part of their lives. And I'm not sure they'll say the same thing about me, but yeah, no, it's great, and it's such a nice feel to it.
Proper rugby club.
Yeah, if we asked them about you now, what would they say?
Probably I'm always in a mood, get really stressed. hopefully they'll say I like a Guinness.
Proper rugby club.
Yeah, no, I think I've tried to be, like, the club was in a bit of a difficult position when I got there. You know, they'd been promoted and then the following season relegated. You know, they found that season really tough and they took some really heavy losses, but they were a group of players that would rock up with 12 and get through it. And I think we've tried to not build it from the bottom. It's not that's probably not what I mean, but just try to put a little bit of why they do what they do back into the game and build up that relationship with rugby again and each other, because I think they just lost that. And it's great to see, you know, there's friendship groups there, there's brothers that play. And I think, you know, they'll probably say I'm a bit wacky, like a bit airy and a bit crazy, and hopefully a little bit different to what they've had coaching before. But I think it really works for us, and yeah, just really did enjoy it.
When you say wacky and airy, like, what would they point to as examples? Are you guys, you know, talking about your feelings the entire time? Have you got crystals? Like, what are we doing?
No, although I did try a feeling session. I didn't go down so well in the early days. But I think, we've tried to do different stuff, and I try and, you know, try and make it as fun as possible, bring like different coaching ideas into it, and let them have a lot of ownership over it, which they probably haven't had before. I think one of the first sessions we played like a game like Crazy Rugby, I call it, which is like multi-directional, and then there's some constraints in it, and on the whistle you play sort of normal rugby, and yeah, like you hear some of the language being used again now, and it's nice to think that they've kind of embraced that side of it quite well. Did a whole theme around Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody for a bit of the season, so that went down, I'm not sure that went down well. I think that was probably more for me than it was for them. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I just thought it was bizarre.
Were you singing? Like, what role did Queen play? Are you talking dress up?
No, we never got to that because of COVID. I mean, it probably would have happened had that not happened. No, just a lot around like language, I guess, and like the songs that get them motivated. They gave me an absolutely shocking playlist, so I thought maybe I could give them some music education. But no, just, yeah, like language and bits around the song and meanings and how that relates to the way we play, I suppose. So they bought into that quite well. Like, I did change a few of the covers, you know, like the album covers that Queen used to have, or like superimpose some of
them. Photoshop their faces.
Yeah, Photoshop their faces. And there was one of, there was something where there's an app, isn't it? And it makes you sing along to a song. There was a couple of them that floated around, which were a little bit embarrassing, but they were good fun.
That's brilliant. That's very lateral as well. I mean, you're really spending a lot of time arts and craftsing, or, well, digitally arts and craftsing around getting them kind of, I don't know, what, like getting the imagination going?
Yeah, I guess. It's like, it's community rugby, it's club rugby. Just, I suppose it's just ways to try and keep it fresh and engaging and fun more than anything. You know, why should they come on a reason called Wednesday night and give up a Saturday when they could be working or with their family? So just trying to mix it up and, yeah, add a little bit of humour in there.
Have you taken any of those ideas to Katie and Sharks?
I'm not sure if I'm brave enough to take it. I'm not sure how she'll feel like a Queen defensive session, but we'll see. No,
she loves a bit of Queen, to be fair.
Oh, well, there we go. Got my in. She's pretty receptive to some of my crazier...
Okay, so for anyone listening or watching who does know, you coach with Katie Daly McLean as the women's performance lead over at Sharks women's coaching team as a women's performance coach. So what is the experience like in the Allianz Prem 15s in comparison?
I'm absolutely loving it. I think, you know, when I left the World Rugby Union, I've started a rugby coaching sort of academy with my partner, do like school stuff and camp stuff. But to be able to be, you know, with Sales Sharks and keep part of my coaching in that sort of elite performance world, if you like, it's just been so refreshing. And just to see it from a totally different angle, you know, whether it's community or performance is totally different. You know, academies to senior teams are totally different. So it's just really good to immerse myself in it and see where they are. You know, they're such a young club in the Premiership. And then, you know, to have somebody like Katie with her experience and knowledge of the game, you know, it's really fascinating. Like, obviously, I'm probably more known when I was playing for defensive roles rather than... you know, attacking roles, certainly against England. I think it's fascinating from her experience with that game understanding from an attack perspective and a game management perspective, you know, in the women's game. It's it's just really interesting to learn from, I suppose. It's both sides of the ball, and that's something that hopefully I can get as much learning from her in a way around that, to help develop my coaching as well.
Is there a kind of a best practice lesson that you've learned out of the experience so far that you wish you had sooner?
Well, best practice. I think I've really enjoyed probably like the co-coaching side of things with Sale, because it's, you know, because I'm a sort of an attached coach to them. It's so nice to have that role where you can free yourself up a little bit and connect with some players on little, you know, certain aspects of the game during something else. You can sort of jump into line out and scrum world. You can jump out, and I just think like probably having that flexibility has been a real learning point, but something that I just think's just a great, like, an invaluable experience when you're part of that coaching team. Like, you've got to try and get the best out of the people you're working with, and I think that was just something that's probably come out of being a sailor.
You guys have got a really cool setup up there as well, haven't you? Katie, not so very obviously dragged me along to look at it, I think pretending she was showing me around, but then all of a sudden I was meeting the owner, I was meeting all these other people, and I was like, Katie, what are we really doing here? This is in the off season. That's a story probably for another time, but you've got an...
anything.
I know, honestly, this is the most unsubtle thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, you've got an awesome setup up there, obviously, very aligned with the mayor, and the facilities are ridiculous. I think the kind of potential of that place from an outsider is massive. That must be something that's quite exciting to be a part of at the moment.
Yeah, exactly that. I think like the facilities are incredible. There seems to be a really a massive buy-in on the growth of the women's section there. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's not, rugby hasn't been in the Northwest, because obviously it has, but obviously it's changing at the moment, and it's aligning itself with Premiership clubs, and it's new and it's exciting. And I think that just probably has a massive pull for the area, you know, as an option and part of the pathway for, you know, young players now to sort of step up and have aspirations of playing in the Premiership. So I just think it's just such a, you know, exciting competition and so close. Like, you've touched on that game already from the weekend. It's just, that's where people want to play now. You know, they want to be in that Premiership and they want to be competing, and to have something in the Northwest is, you know, a massive opportunity for us to capitalise on, really.
But it hasn't all been plain sailing. So you have great facilities. The future looks bright. The league is growing. The interest in it is certainly, you know, hotting up. But it has been a tough season. As a coach, that must mean quite a bit of pressure for you guys.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was any sort of massive expectations or pressure put on this season in terms of performance. It is new for Sale to sort of find their feet in the Premiership, but I guess probably that's probably the better way of wording it. But, you know, it's not just about sort of forming that team and getting them to be cohesive and perform, but it's also about the game is changing and it's becoming, you know, more professional by the month, it feels, you know, and it is different now. And I suppose it's managing that group of players that haven't experienced that level of rugby or that change of rugby, if you like, into what looks like what the future will be, you know. And it's great that at some point those younger players will meet in the middle, if you like, but it's just sort of a bottom up and a top down to try and make it work at the moment. And, you know, it's important, and we try and get a bigger player pool, you know, to drive competition within the squad up here. And it's really important that the teams underneath them are playing competitively, so that there is that kind of step up and that pathway underneath. Because, you know, I've had little sort of pockets of community rugby and girls rugby, and that, you know, the younger girls coming through will, I think, you know, be a real asset to Sale Sharks when they're a few years older.
How do you keep a hold of them? Like, because I think we've seen, say, I think it was a TDG thing not long ago, wasn't there? Or the announcement of the England under 18s or something. So many of that squad, I think like over 50%, are based in the north. And I'm being very general with the north, but based in the north. Yet obviously the trickle down effect to the Prem, and has been for years, is then everybody exits seemingly and hits up all the southern clubs. Like, how do you retain those players? How do you keep, like you say, rugby strong in the north in order to continue to grow that? And I appreciate you might not have the answer to that, but obviously that's got to be something that is on yours and Katie's mind.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's interesting, isn't it? Like, you see some of the Red Roses games now being moved around the country and getting out to the public what the potential, you know, women's rugby has, which is amazing. And I think the growth of the Premiership will certainly help. And the more competitive those teams are, so you know, you don't want your top four teams to run away with it and then all those top four teams be London based. Like, it doesn't help. But also, you know, there's probably bigger conversations around how those squads are composed of players and where those players are from, which is a whole other kettle of fish. And
do you want to elaborate?
Our conversation over a Guinness. But no, I think it is important that that pathway is visible. And I think having something that is tangible for them to touch and feel and be part of in the Northwest is massive. And I think that's where SAIL have probably a responsibility to ensure that we create that and we make it something that people, you know, players want to come and join. I think that's really important. You know, you hear a lot, don't you, in the Premiership about like teams' DNA and what it is that draws them. And I think we're probably in a period where it's around, I don't know, sort of figuring out what that is and making it our own and making people want to come and, you know, to bring some big names in so that when they do have a tour and they do meet the owner and they get really excited about the rugby club, they might choose to stay.
The thing was, my accommodation package was Katie Daly McLean's spare room, and I just thought, I lived with that girl for a couple of years, and that period of my life is done.
She's such a diva now. But I guess that is, I mean, that's the thing with coaching at this level, is that you are kind of both thinking marketing and high performance. Like, you're part wearing both caps, because you're constantly, you know, also future planning a bit and trying to address the perception of both the sport, but the league, and, you know, kind of trying to tide the current crop of talent over long enough so that the next generation can start feeding through and you can really build on that queue.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really, you know, I have a similar sort of experience from being in Wales. You know, it's really similar. Everything sort of happens in the south of Wales, if you like, and there is nothing up in North Wales. You know, obviously there's RGC and not a region. So all four regions are based down south, and North Wales, if you like, feeds them. So it's quite a similar copy of that, if you like, across the border for me. But I think, you know, you've got people who understand that. Myself and Kate, we've got a club full of Northerners who are very passionate about making sure that works, which I think is really important. You know, they've an understanding of it, but they've also got a drive to make it better. You know, Katie herself and her coaching journey is exactly that. You know, had to come down south in order to play, and I think she feels probably a bit of a responsibility, you know, rightly or wrongly, that she can try and change that and put something back up in the Northwest.
You guys have Wasps coming up this weekend. What's the mood going into it?
Yeah, it's good. You know, I think probably from some of the games that if people have watched, like, we've been really good for 40 minutes. And I think that's probably something that's becoming, is great, you know, when we start holding our own for 40 minutes. I think that's really important. But then when you can't break that invisible barrier, if you like, it becomes more of a weight than anything else. So we've had some good performances, and we've started to score after conceding, which has been really important as well, you know, to understand that we can keep ourselves in the game. So I think if we can try and tie in a few of the halves from the last couple of matches and then put them together, it's all about performance, you know, and just making sure that the bits that we look at the beginning of the week are the bits that we sort of focus on for the game, really. You know, the weather hasn't helped up here, and I think we might be on an artificial pitch for the weekend, which would be nice, you know, although saying that, Wasp didn't really like playing Bristol in the mud, so I might give it a really good watering before we No, I think, yeah, like, you know, performance will be everything on the weekend, and hopefully if the weather stays fairly calm, we can have a good run up.
Oh, it is a young side, so I guess it is also, I guess it's a lot of what the coaching requires is of you to keep reminding them of, you know, perhaps the bigger picture. If this weekend doesn't go well, you know, what we're trying to get out of this outside of the right score line.
Yeah, definitely. Look at, you know, we've got players like Lizzie Duffy at fly half, who obviously has a pretty decent mentor in Katie Daly-McLean. But she's literally learning at the coalface, if you like, you know, game by game, having those decisions, getting to sit down with her after and reviewing them. And I think it'll put her in a great place, you know, for the future. And it's just about making sure that, I guess, we develop those guys in the right way so that they're still enjoying their rugby, but they're learning as well. And you know, if we can make that experience good for them, you know, they'll hopefully stay at the club as well and keep coming back to us.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So the Rugby 7-Eleven Academy that you started with Jess, I mean, that's not just for girls. You are working kind of across genders in coaching, but you're also trying to just bring the next generation of rugby stars through. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's great. If I could put that on the business plan, that'd be wicked.
You don't seem to be distinguishing between the two as much as many people seem to kind of fall on one or the other side in terms of their efforts.
Yeah, I think it's just really important for us to try and, you know, all I think experiences as an athlete and as a coach, you know, you don't want to be sort of stereotyped in any way, shape or form. And I think like both Jess and I have had different experiences of, probably gender discrimination, if I'm throughout your rugby and when you're an athlete and when you're a player. And I think it's important for us if we can sort of take those barriers away from them and they don't see that as any different. I think that's really important for us. But equally, like, the next lot of young female players up here aren't really treated any differently either. So it's been great for us. You know, I'm probably not sure why we chose to do it in the middle of a global pandemic. That's a choice we made and we're sticking with it. And it's been slowly sort of coming into life, you know, as restrictions have come down. But, you know, this next sort of period is really busy and we're at half-term camps this week. So it's really exciting. Six Nations themed. No Queen.
they wouldn't know who they were.
I was gonna say, okay, do kids, when you say Queen, do they think person?
The yeah. Queen.
Yeah.
It's interesting, like, we just tried to go on TikTok again, like, you know, which obviously everyone did in lockdown and had a little dance, but now I'm like, right, I really need to up my game. Like, I'm not cool enough. So I'm expecting that to be bombarded in the next couple of days. Like, how many reels and how many TikToks can I do in
Have you got anyone helping you with that? Just because I mean, I'd love to sign up as well. Maybe your academy could also include any of the learnings that you gain.
Yeah, 100%. We can make it like a full part of it. I think it's just taken off, hasn't it? Obviously, with everything with the Six Nations sponsorship, it just seems that every rugby player is heading over to TikTok. So.
This one isn't.
Yet.
I'm just going to throw it out there.
Emily is remaining steadfast.
We had a meeting the other day. We always have these calls on a Wednesday morning and they're about various different things. And the other morning, the first topic on the list was TikTok. And it was essentially a bit of a lesson, like how you can use it, how great it can be, what it can do for this, that and the other, blah, 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 blah. And I literally sat there and I was texting Sarah Hunter at the time. Shouldn't do that in a meeting, I know, but I was texting Sarah Hunter at the time and we were both like, do you have any idea what he was talking about? We were literally like two grannies, just no clue, like straight over our heads. So look, never say never, but it's very unlikely.
I thought you were going to say you were sending a fax over to...
yeah. So the pigeon had gone, but...
but the beeper is on charge, basically.
Exactly.
But you're a keen baker, Emily. You should just get into food TikTok and showcase all of the cake baking, banana bread baking. What's the latest thing you've done when the eggs needed to be used up?
You know what? I haven't actually baked in a while, to be fair. My issue isn't like, well, it probably is content, but it's how you do it. We don't need to get into it now, but I'm just not particularly good with technology. I had to message Sam the night before about, because I couldn't open the brief for today's show and I couldn't figure out how to record on my phone. So I'm just a bit archaic, if I'm honest. So I think I'm staying in my lane.
But you are exceptional at a few other things. So we'll just leave you in peace for now.
If you could.
Yeah, definitely. Rachel, do you feel a lot of pressure? Because you are trying to market your business, your endeavors. It does sometimes seem like the world is asking a lot of us to, you know, not only be an exceptional coach and be there for your players and, you know, develop compelling ways to keep both club and, your Prem side ticking over and growing and prospering, but, you know, figuring out how to also balance TikTok in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, there is a bit, because that is the way, you know, the game's going and that's where the audience is watching. But I think it's quite a good learning as well. You know, I've enjoyed doing stuff like that's business related. It's been something new to sort of focus on and get my teeth into that's a little bit different. You know, I haven't done it before, but I think, you know, if I can probably name drop, you know, Rocky from the Bar Bars tour, I've never seen someone throw themselves into so many TikToks in my life. And I just think, you know, she's a couple of years older than me. And I think if she can fully embrace it, then it's time for me to do that as well.
The most interesting conversation I've had on the topic was with a TikTok influencer in South Africa who built an audience of millions virtually overnight. And his entire philosophy on it was that we're all trying to not look stupid. To make stuff as if people are going to go back and scroll down on all of the TikToks we've put out there and then judge the overall offering. And his entire approach to it was, no one is ever going to go onto your page and look at all of your TikToks. They're only going to watch what the feed offers them. So whether you post one that you love per week or six a day, which is what he was doing, of which five are probably quite rubbish, the one that hits, that's all that matters. He doesn't even go back and delete the ones that didn't do well. His whole approach was just to keep kind of at it and then seeing what works and not to be so self-aware to think that anyone's actually going to care.
Just a numbers game. Just churn them out.
Just keep doing it. It's a bit like getting out there and just playing. Like no one is after 10 years going to go back and say how many times did you fail. It's about how many times you succeeded.
I hope so.
Tails, can I just go back to the 7-Eleven bit? I think it's brilliant. Can I ask why you set it up? Was it because, and I think I know the answer to this a little bit, but obviously Jess and you have a massive interest in coaching and rugby and blah, blah, blah. Or was part of it as well to do with kind of potential shortfalls that you've obviously seen and feel within Wales's kind of community rugby and development and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think probably part of that is the reason why. Like, obviously, you know, I love coaching and I was so fortunate enough to get a chunk of that with the community department. In the Welsh Rugby Union, I had some crazy experiences, you know, to go out and coach in Japan, and just gave me like a real love for that level of rugby. And I think there's obviously, you know, I didn't live up in North Wales the whole time. I've lived down in South Wales, I've been in Bristol, moved about, and I've come home, and part of me does feel like I need to do something here in order, not, you know, like, not about repaying the people that have supported me, but I think the growth of the women's game, certainly in Wales and England, has just expanded so fast. It's almost like the provision that's there isn't ready for it. And I think there's a real difference between probably that participation side of the game where people want to come in and play variations of the game. So tag, touch, modified rules. And then there's a group of players now who really want to crack on and become professional rugby players. And I think just the provision that's there to support them into doing that probably isn't quite there yet. You know, we've got, as I said, like there's academies in Wales, but they're all male predominantly. You know, they're trying to do some work in the Scarlets to make theirs female based as well. But all these facilities are there. It's just they're not an offering for the female participants, which just seems a bit crazy. And I think we saw that opportunity, and I suppose it's something that's really important to both Jess and I, is ensuring that there's that offering for women and girls, particularly passionate about that, and making sure that we provide something for that. And you know, like being selfish, it's a great way for us to stay in the game, stay fresh, figure out what kids love, and keep us on our toes as coaches. So it's a bit of both. And obviously Jess is fluent Welsh language and still learning, or always learning, I should rephrase it as. But it's really important for us to have the Welsh language side of it as well. You know, it's a massive part of our heritage, and we don't get a lot of that at that level in rugby. So yeah, it's probably 101 different things. And like I said, a global pandemic and a lot of time twiddling your thumbs and avoiding TikTok dances. Both of it. Had massive ideas for where it might go and what it might be. And, you know, hopefully we can keep transforming ourselves at the pace of the women and girls game at the moment, so that we can keep ourselves fresh and, you know, keep an offering for it. You know, it might be that we do, part of that professionalism of the game and how we can support that as well, you know, is probably something that will be added into it next. And obviously there's a massive chunk of mental health and well-being, which is really important now as well in player development. So yeah, I'm sure there's lots of different avenues for us to keep upskilling ourselves in it.
It's interesting to me that you mentioned the Welsh language thing, because I'm also not speaking my first language here. And identity is so closely intertwined, particularly when you start playing rugby for your country, as you did on so many occasions. And it's often when you look back at that journey and going, where is the next, you know, group going to come from, and how closely like linked will their ideals of performance be to maintaining, you know, something that would leave, you know, a legacy. Is that what you're doing, even from outside of the establishment, trying to build on, you know, something that has a sort of value beyond the scope of your very impressive career?
Yeah, I think, like, it's, you know, obviously there's always that part of developing players, isn't there, and making them want to be better rugby players. But I think any coach is, you know, if they're in it for the right reasons, it's about helping them as a person and making sure that they sort of develop themselves in that way. And I think, you know, in Wales, rugby is such a massive part of people's lives. You know, you look at it this next few weeks with the guys, Six Nations, you know, it turns into an absolute frenzy of rugby. And it is really important to people in Wales. And like you said, that the language part of it for us is woven through everything that we do in rugby, and it's huge. And sometimes I think we probably lose our identity a little bit. So yeah, you know, Jess is a first language Welsh, and North Walian Welsh as well, which is obviously very different to South Walian Welsh. Yeah, like it's great for us to be able to do that and to get the kids to feel confident giving feedback in their first language and asking questions in their first language is really important. I think it just makes them so much more comfortable and able to sort of throw themselves into that learning process.
Do you feel a lot of pressure? Is it pressure, or is it responsibility, just kind of as a steward of, you know, of that generation coming through?
Yeah, I don't think it's a pressure. I think it's just something that you want to retain that heritage, I think. You know, I was in a Welsh-speaking primary school, but not in a Welsh first language secondary school. And you know, something that we've said, you know, like if we go on to have kids in our relationship, it's something that we want to ensure that our kids speak Welsh. It's important to us, you know, that we keep that part of it. And I think you know, it's funny, isn't it? Like, languages come and go. And at one point, you know, people thought like the Welsh language was going to fizzle out. But in some pockets of the communities around here, it's just such an important part of our lives. And like, we kind of feel a bit of a responsibility to ensure that we don't let it go, or we don't get complacent and just speak in English.
Yeah, sorry. We're going off on a multilingual like tangent here, and Emily's just sitting there like puzzled. But this is a conversation that my friends have all the time: is do I send my child to, you know, an English first language school, or do you raise them you know, in a language that's only spoken by, you know, a few million people? But the benefits of being multilingual and being able to think that way, I do think it changes your brain, like, structurally.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's amazing. And like I said, I think it helps players who are first language Welsh just feel so much more comfortable and like engage in a conversation. And I think, you know, if I flipped it and I was in an all Welsh speaking environment and I didn't feel confident asking that question, maybe I wouldn't do it, because I wouldn't want to embarrass myself with like not being able to say it. And I just think, yeah, like, it's really important that we don't let that go. And give them the right opportunity. And yeah, hopefully, like, it's something that I keep learning. You know, I practice with all the young kids. The secondary school kids are a little bit more savvy and a little bit more ruthless for my pronunciation. A really good relationship with them, I sort of drop a little bit in. But getting to coach like minis and juniors in Welsh is brilliant, because they actually help me speak the language. It's really cool. Like, they're pretty good like that, and yeah, keeps me on my toes as well.
That's brilliant. It's a level of activism which I feel isn't spoken about all that much. I mean, when people talk to you, I'm sure on podcasts such as these, that the conversation around activism is usually gender based. It's, you know, you're a woman, you tend to stand up and make unpopular decisions. You left the Welsh Rugby Union. You know, there's been a lot that's happened at Wales, and you know, the grievance letter that was signed as well. There's been, you know, a big shift in many promises. Contracts have been awarded. Do you think that players are being listened to now? Is that what you're getting from this looking in?
Yeah, I think like times are changing. I think, you know, we talked about it, didn't we? Like that, the expansion and the growth of the sports happened so quickly, and you know, Skazia, you know a lot more about this with the contracting side of it with England, but I think a lot of players can be quite naive because it's a contract and it sounds amazing, and you know, I'd have probably fallen into exactly the same trap at the end of my career. Would I wanted to do it? Would I have taken a pay cut? Like, would I have understood the ins and outs of that contract? Would I have really figured out what that means for me in terms of you know, what I could go and do as an individual as well? I just think, you know, like, that's probably my bigger concern for a lot of the athletes in Wales. Like, you want to make sure that no one falls into a trap or makes a bad mistake. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, you know, as players, associations that support players and get them through that. But it's just a massive, I think, time of upskilling them to make sure they don't make the wrong decisions, or at least know how to make the right ones. You know, we were fortunate in Wales. We had somebody like Jazz Joyce, who had obviously experienced everything with Team GB, and that was the first time really that kind of conversation had happened. You know, her and Hannah Jones, and obviously Kira Bevan, and those like names like that started to understand that more professional side of the game. And I just think it's so young in its development, especially in Wales, that you know, people. Players, particularly like learning to manage and juggling that, will be a massive transformation over the next few years. But it's great that they feel like they have a voice, that they feel that they can speak up. You know, I think that's massively important. You wouldn't want a team playing that didn't feel like they were supported by their own union. You know, don't think that's right. And hopefully now there's structure in place to look after players a little bit more.
Yeah, I think. Like, we've definitely been on a journey with our contracts. they didn't start great, but they started. And I think sometimes that's the important thing. And you kind of go from there and you make your decision based on your own personal circumstance, what you think you can do, what you think you can't do, what you can and can't commit to, all those sorts of things. But I think making a start is the biggest part. And as I say, hopefully then you all evolve together and you fix things and you figure out, yes, that does work. No, that doesn't work. Obviously, Wales have got some full-time contracts and some retainer contracts and my understanding are kind of a bit in between as well. So for me, like the start point is really, really important. It might not be the kind of Range Rover driving lavish lifestyle that people think sometimes rugby professional contracts are. Trust me, they're still not 7 years on, but you have to start somewhere with these things. So I guess completely from an outsider point looking forward, it's a really positive step for the Welsh's women's game. But also I'm hoping to continue that around the world. Like so many unions now, New Zealand obviously have kind of put their ideas up and offered what looks like proper full-time contracts. Obviously Ireland are going through their own transition at the moment. Scotland have got slightly different scheme on how they do things, but I think there's some waves being made and hopefully they just continue to get bigger.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are off like performance reviews as well, aren't they? So like internal and external performance reviews. And I think, like you said, you'd like to think that there's a bit of a domino effect to that. So once somebody does, you know, and I think obviously the salary on the contracts is always going to be hopefully going in the right direction, but you can see, you know, the value that unions put on their players. And I think that then drives others to match it or at least try and match it. And I think that's probably, like you said, the start of it is more important than probably where we are right now. And I think a lot of people in Wales know that it's not going to be perfect, like especially like this next period of, you know, once this 12 months is gone and what, you know, what the next set of contracts look like. But it's just the fact that it started. And I think that's massive. And like you said, you'd love to think that everyone can work together and keep moving it forward to either have more or, you know, find a format that suits us.
You left the WRU, so I'm going to have to ask about that because we can't have you on and not ask. Is this just a break, not a breakup? Where are we? If the time was right, and at some point in the future, you seem to be the kind of person who might still have a point to prove.
Well, I've never had it referred to as a break. Like the Joey Rachel thing, that's another whole generation of words.
Immediately where I went to was Friends, straight away.
Yeah. No, like I think I said like last year that although I'm not, you know, involved with the Welsh Rugby Union in any way at the moment, I don't want to shy away from having aspirations. You know, like I said, I'm actually massively passionate about Welsh rugby, and if I ever got the chance to coach the national squad, you know, I think that would mean an awful lot to me. You know, I'd love to think I could do something a bit different there that might work. But yeah, I think there's certainly going to have to be a period of time where I can go away and really reflect properly and probably continue my coaching journey and learn from different environments. Like I said, you know, I'd worked for the union before and then obviously up in North Wales, which is still union run. And yeah, I think it's important as a coach that you go out and see different environments and how different people do it, I think is massive, you know. So trying to put a positive spin on it in that way that I can go and upskill myself. And, you know, obviously, like we spoke about the Prem, you know, I think it's a great place to do that for me at the moment, certainly. So, yeah, I think, you know, I won't shy away from the fact that I'd love to do it one day, but it probably have to have a little bit of time.
Well, I mean, the Barbarians, we love, you know, seeing you involved there in the meantime. So between that and, you know, the Allianz Prem 15s and the club and, you know, it's not like you're sitting still. You're still making massive moves and having an impact. Sorry, my cat is making a lot of noise under here. Tell us about the Barbarians, just to reflect on that, because you ended up having a pretty solid crowd. I mean, record-breaking, in fact, at Twickenham. That game, Mo Scarrett, I always call her that. I always do this. I don't know why.
We've had that our entire lives. Don't worry about it.
You are one person in my brain. So Mohan told us about the getting into the taxis and stuff. Was there a moment there where you went, oh, no one can be serious. You cannot actually expect us to now do this. Or are you just opportunity kind of driven, seeing a gap and going, we need to make the most of this?
Yeah, it was a bit like opportunity, I think. Like the players mentioned at the beginning of the week, like the opportunity that it would create having the doubleheader and how much it meant to them to, you know, a fair chunk of them to be at Twickenham. You know, that was huge for them as well. And to have that global audience was a massive part of it. And probably that responsibility of making it right for the next generation, you know, showcasing, if you like, what female rugby players can do in that kind of more relaxed environment. And then, yeah, like the morning of that game was probably the most bizarre few hours that I think probably any of us have been through, like as a management group. But it was just that sudden, that penny drop moment of like the players want to have an opportunity to do something massive, and we can actually make it bigger than we ever thought we were going to be able to. So it just suddenly seemed like the right thing. And I think, you know, I like to obviously, you know, Barbarians is a real privilege to be part of, but that group of players that day to be able to manage themselves as people and as athletes is a real credit to them, because they literally just embraced the opportunity. And I think, you know, when we then got to play, they just just soaked it all up. You know, like you couldn't have written it. Like no one really knew how that morning was going to go. And yeah, you mentioned Mo talking around getting in taxis with different people. And yeah, you know, I can remember Coxie knocking on the door asking if she could have our front row. And I think I said something like, at the moment, they come in these by Ubers. So 5 minutes. I have to reflect on that comment sometimes. I just think, wow, like, that actually happened. So yeah, you know, a massive shout out to obviously Jo Yap as well, like to be with her on that coaching journey and just to learn from her and how chilled out she is and just takes everything in her stride and how that relates to players, like, was massive, because she was pretty much unflappable that day. And I think the players just buzzed off that and were like, well, you know, she's fine, we're fine. But yeah, like I've got a lot to thank the Barbars for in every way, really. Like they seem to find me at the right times in my life. That's probably how I described it. But I think I said once, it was like, you know, when that Batman sign goes up and you see in the silhouette, I see that and it just seems to pop up at the right times for me. So yeah, I'm like, I'll be eternally grateful for the opportunities they've given me. And, you know, hope that they keep smashing the park with, you know, record viewings and stuff like that, and keep showing the world, I guess, what they are and what they're about.
Were you the one flapping, Tails?
I was absolutely loving it. Like, that's right. I just thought it was really funny, like people were taking selfies and chilling out, and yeah, it was pretty cool. But I think it added it to the moment, and
it's very Barbarians almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
a bit off the cuff, just chill, see what happens, give it a whirl.
I think we'd got dropped off from the Uber like at the wrong gate, and Rinna Lloyd was like smashing, like, you know, on the gates to see if they could come in, and security guy at Twickenham was like, what are you here for? And she was like, I'm a player. And like, everyone was so accommodating. They're like, oh my god, like opening the big gates, like get through, and you know, like running down the wrong corridors. And so you just, you know, you couldn't have written it. But to have that chance, I think was class, you know. And I think, you know, the WhatsApp groups still go constantly, like they were on today. Like, I think Sydney Palms had the jersey framed, and like they all touch base and they have selfies with each other when they find each other around the world, you know, when they play against each other or with each other. And it's just great, you know. I think that moment hopefully will stay with them for a very long time.
It's such a brilliant sisterhood, man. What a club to be part of.
So good.
I think you know, it probably wasn't like the traditional Barbars experience because of the pandemic, but yeah, like I said, that group of players just managed themselves so well. And like you know, you mentioned Mo Hunt before, like what a character. Like she was absolutely brilliant in getting that team cohesed. And yeah, like I hadn't had the privilege of coaching her before or our past crossing. So yeah, I was just really impressed by her as a person, and she certainly lived up to the jersey.
Did you just think she was a chirpsy little nine prior to that? That's what most people think. Most people just hear her on the field and they're like, oh god, and then they meet her and they're like, all right, fine.
Yeah, she's just so lovely, isn't it? Like, some people are just so lovely, you know. I always think like, you meet Amber Reid and everyone's like, she's the nicest person in rugby, and it's like, yeah, Mo's the same. And they're just Mo literally got that team going on and off the pitch. So yeah, I'm sure she will have another invitation at some point.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, I mean, if the coach says so. Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel Taylor. It's been amazing to have your company, and we're so excited to see where you spread your love of rugby to next, and the teams that you'll be able to influence, and the youngsters that you'll still be guiding through the ranks. Best of luck for this weekend.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been a good chat.
Cheers, Tails.
That wraps up the good, the Scars, and the rugby. And make sure you tell a friend if you enjoyed listening. And we'll see you again next time.